Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Thursday, August 16th, and another one of those 25 under 25 type lists that I did not get on. Sadly, this is your boy Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City covering the NBA and other things for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. Today, we're going to be talking about the 25 under 25 list that The Athletic put out on Wednesday. They did a piece about the 25 best Detroit sports athletes under 25 years old in the four major sports. I've got some thoughts on that. And also, we're going to replay an interview that I did in March with Larry Brown, the former Pistons coach, the Hall of Famer, as we've got all sorts of new listeners out there now, and we wanted to get that content out there. It was one of the more special things we did over this past year on the Locked On Pistons podcast, and wanted to share it with the new listeners and those who might have missed it back in March. And also, it's August, so I don't have all that much content to talk about, so we're going to reuse some of the old stuff. We might do that a little bit more as the month goes on. Probably not. I do have some exciting news to pass along. On Wednesday, did a nice long interview with George Blaha, the voice of the Pistons. Speaking of Michigan Sports Hall of Famers there as well, but not a basketball Hall of Famer. We'll get into that too, as there is no basketball Hall of Fame announcers. There's no Ford Frick Award like there is in baseball, so nothing of the sort for basketball announcers out there. So I'll be playing for you guys the interview that I did with George Blaha on Wednesday. That'll be coming up next week, probably Monday, and then probably be breaking up into two parts for Tuesday or Wednesday part two. So look forward to that. Thanks again to George Blaha for taking the time to join me on Wednesday for that interview. Thought it went well, so look forward to that next week. Check me out on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore. After that, check us out on the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, @LockedOnPistons, aptly named. I came up with that name all myself. And then also the Facebook page, Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Good conversation there from time to time, so I'd like to keep that going as the season crawls closer for the Detroit Pistons. But as we mentioned, the 25 under 25 story done by The Athletic, and by the way, I will again pass along on the Locked On Pistons Twitter account the link that you can get a subscription to The Athletic. You can get 40% off the first year of that subscription if you use our link for the Locked On Podcast Network. That will help support the network as well. So check that out. If you're gonna, if you've been thinking about signing up for The Athletic, I encourage you to do that. And the Locked On Podcast Network will get a little bit of shekels for that as well if you sign up through that link. But like I said, 25 under 25 put together by The Athletic Detroit writers. A great concept for the story, no doubt. Max Boltman put the piece together, the Tigers writer for The Athletic, writing the intro and everything, and then all the other beat writers for all the other sports stepped in for when their respective beats stepped out on the list. He acknowledged in Max's intro that the inherent potential flaws in the process, the comparison in the different sports, and the players in the different stages of their careers, despite being at that young age, there's all sorts of different stages for the different sports. You know, you get guys who are in deep minor leagues for, you know, hockey and baseball against players who are going into their fourth season at the professional level, or the major league level, I should say, for like basketball players like Stanley Johnson and stuff like that. And you could overdo it by putting a rubric together of what it means. So I kind of like the fact that they just kept it open-ended and let the writers of the respective sports do the voting themselves and just piece together what the results came out to be. Also, very interesting because we know in Pistons land here who turned 25 last week and became ineligible on August 10th with their 25th birthday, and that was Andre Drummond. So he is not included on this list of players under 25. One on the list that was included was Dylan Larkin, number one for the Detroit Red Wings. Number two was Taylor Decker, the left tackle of the Detroit Lions. And then Joe Jimenez, the eighth inning guy for the Detroit Tigers, the first time All-Star in his first full season in the major leagues this year. First off, first impression, pretty weak in terms of the top three, Dylan Larkin, Taylor Decker, and Joe Jimenez. No real game changers on this entire list. For all the talk about the future, particularly with the Red Wings and the Tigers in rebuild mode, not a lot of headliners that this town can get too excited about. Honestly, if Andre Drummond were available, I would have put him number one ahead of Dylan Larkin, a two-time All-Star. And he's got a rap album, for crying out loud. How could he not be number one? anyways, it's a hypothetical, obviously, with Dre there as the list came out after his 25th birthday. But the 25 Detroit sports athletes from the four major teams that actually were on the list, just two of them were on that list and not really at premium positions on it either. By the way, if I were voting in this list and Dre was not eligible like he isn't on this one, I would have had Jimenez number one ahead of Larkin, ahead of Taylor Decker. And not that I think Joe Jimenez is this amazing talent. I just think the fact that he's made an all-star game maybe puts him a little bit ahead of Dylan Larkin, who has had two pretty good seasons in the NHL, and then the sophomore slump that he had in year two qualifies as a really bad season. So certainly he got back on track in year three, but we will see as time goes on if he's able to ever really attain that star level that Joe Jimenez has really kind of already reached. And the projections seem pretty good for Jimenez to be the closer of the future for the Tigers. Now, like we talked about, one of the inherent flaws of the exercise is how to handle the NBA compared to other leagues. You know, you talk about baseball rosters. They're 25 deep at the major league level, and you have your nine regulars, your five starting pitchers, and then a few guys in the bullpen that are very consequential as well. So you got 15 to 20 very significant players on that roster. You got a 53-man roster in the NFL, and you could argue that at least 22 of those starters are significant players, with a few others sprinkled in there too, to different degrees. Obviously, the quarterback being the most important position, and everyone else kind of falls in line behind that. Probably helped Taylor Decker's case being a left tackle, one of the probably five most important positions on a football team, you could very much argue these days. In hockey, there's like, I think about 25 guys on the roster as well. That's a guess. I'm not sure. And of them, 12 to 16 are very significant, I would say, guys that are going to be forwards and defensemen that are on the ice quite a bit. And then your starting goalie, you could throw in there too. Your third liners, your fourth liners, your third line defense, maybe not quite, you know, quote unquote, significant players at the end of the day. Plus, you have a baseball and hockey team in this town who are undergoing, you know, like full rebuilds right now. So the talent pool, the amount of quantity of players is kind of made for a list like this, especially when the quality of players isn't very high across the town. Meanwhile, you got 15 guys in an NBA roster and really, you know, seven, maybe nine are very significant in the grand scheme of things. And if my opinion, if I were voting on this, I would take the fact that individual NBA players mean much more to their franchise and probably boost them a little bit in these ratings because of that. For the same reasons that Taylor Decker being a left tackle probably gets a little bit of a boost with the importance of position there, I would give just any individual NBA player who's in the rotation for their team probably that boost because they're just so important to the team. And I wouldn't make it a huge boost. It might just even be, you know, tie goes to the NBA player or something like that. Given that criteria and maybe how it could be tweaked if you're thinking about things from an NBA perspective at the first foremost point, I'd be interested to see James Edwards' ballot, in fact. And I'll reach out to him sometime on Thursday and see if he'll tweet that out and what he thought of the overall list, or maybe they said not to divulge who they voted for. But anyways, Luke Kennard checks in the list at number 11 out of the 25 under 25 Detroit sports athletes, and he is joined by only one teammate, and that's Stanley Johnson, who is at number 18 on the list. I think these are both too low. Here's a couple of nearby guys who are ahead of Kennard on this list that I would rank below Luke at 8, 9, and 10. That's Franklin Perez of the Tigers, traded in the Justin Verlander deal. He missed most of the season, still a huge wild card for the Tigers. Obviously has never played in a major league game, and just one of a crop of starting pitchers who could kind of go either way for this group. I would have put Luke ahead of him. Kenny Golladay, the wide receiver for the Lions, he missed most of his only NFL season, was just a third-round draft pick, so not a blue-chip prospect, and I don't... You know, he's a tall player. He's good in the red zone. He should be able to be a productive player in the NFL for a handful of years, but I just don't see the star potential there. And obviously, Luke Kennard doesn't have a whole lot of star potential either, but really not a whole lot of bright side, and certainly no guarantee for Kenny Golladay to have a long and productive career with the Detroit Lions. And then Michael Rasmussen, number 10 for the Detroit Red Wings. And this isn't Locked on Red Wings. If you listen to this show enough, you know I'm not as well-versed in hockey as I probably should be as someone who reports on sports here in Hockey Town, and I will be making that a point of my sports fandom this next year or so to get a little bit more well-versed with a hockey team who appears to have a brighter future than maybe their present. But as a first-round pick last year, Rasmussen was panned a little bit, ridiculed by much of the hockey world. He had a good season in the minors his first year in the Red Wings organization, but doesn't project to be a huge impact player in Detroit from what I understand. So I would have stuck Luke ahead of him as well. Also, Rasmussen, the fourth Red Wing on this list, and it's in a minor league system that's not really setting the prospect lists on fire or scaring the hockey world with its star potential. Kennard, on the other hand, had a very good rookie season. At the end of the day, he was maybe, I don't know, and this is an argument that we could make going forward, but he was maybe the eighth and maybe even like the 12th best rookie in the league, somewhere in that range of the NBA, in a sport where the individuals matter a lot more than in other sports. And Stanley Johnson, we've talked about him so much on this podcast, and we'll continue to as he enters his restricted free agency summer next year. But he's just below Philip Hronek, and an apology to young Philip for the possible butchering of his pronunciation there. I know how it feels with a bad last name. Defenseman there who might make the Red Wings this year, Philip also gets the distinction of being the one guy on this list that I've actually never heard of until I was reading this list. Other guys for the Pistons could have included Henry Ellenson, Bruce Brown, Kyrie Thomas. Those are three guys on the Pistons roster who are all eligible age-wise, but I get it. You know, not all that much to get excited about in terms of upside for those guys, especially given the defensive shortcomings of young Henry Ellenson and the lack of any kind of NBA resume at all and anything proven from Brown and Thomas. So possibly maybe those guys could sneak onto the list in future years because they're all three young enough to have a couple more shots at a list like this if the Athletic continues it, which I wish they would. It was a fun exercise, nice barroom type of arguments to be involved in there. Although I will say that 24 and 25 on the list, Jamal Agnew of the Lions, I mean, is there a universe where this guy gets a lot better going forward? I guess the jury is kind of out. Maybe he becomes a more of a factor in the defensive backfield, but if he's just a returner, is he going to be more Eddie Drummond flash in the pan, or is this guy like a Mel Gray impact career kick punt returner for the Lions going forward? And then 25 was Dennis Chalowski, a Red Wings prospect that I had barely heard of, apparently a fringe NHLer defenseman at this point. And you can kill me for this, given the poor performance of summer league and the lack of defensive projectables for him. But I would have put Henry Ellenson at number 25 on this list. I stand by it. He's, I believe, just 21 years old, still maybe 22. I don't have it in front of me right now, but I would have stuck Henry on there. Maybe some potential, enough offensive potential to possibly become a rotational player in this league, maybe even sooner rather than later. And with John Lewis' injury, maybe has the ultimate chance coming up in his third year to make an impact with the roster here with the Detroit Pistons and new coach Dwayne Casey. But up next, we're going to be going back to March and replaying our conversation with Larry Brown, the former Pistons coach. But if your company wants to reach that key demo of men between the ages of 18 and 44, including provincial Pistons fans, that probably have ties to Metro Detroit and an interest in getting their dollars spent locally, then you should be sponsoring Locked On Pistons. We are listened to by 98% men, 80% of those between the ages of 18 to 44, all sorts of daily dedicated listeners throughout the state of Michigan, the country, and the world. If you're interested in reaching that group, email me at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
And we are now being joined by one of the greatest basketball coaches of all time, also a heck of a player in his day, too. 2004 NBA championship coach with the Detroit Pistons, led them to the title. Hall of Famer Larry Brown, thanks for joining us here on Locked On Pistons.
I'm happy to be here.
Now, Larry, you've lived a lot of places in your coaching and basketball career, playing-wise, too. Well, where are you spending most of your time these days?
Well, I have two kids at SMU. I visit them a lot. I'm in New York a lot, but mostly I'm visiting a lot of colleges, you know, guys that have been a big part of my life that happen to be coaching now. All invite me to kind of come in and critique them, but I'm the one that's always learning. And it keeps me involved. I don't miss games so much. Once a game, you know, starts, I love the competition, but I always a little nervous. I didn't prepare my team for some things we might see, so I had a little anxiety there. But I love being around coaches and players. So getting to see other college coaches work, and then even some pro teams, it keeps me involved.
When you sit down to watch a game these days, do you find yourself watching more college games or pro games? Or is it kind of maybe the old Carolina teams, or are there certain NBA teams that you try to catch as well?
You know, I have an invested interest in so many programs and then in pro ball as well. So, you know, anytime a ball bounces, I'm interested in watching. So it really doesn't matter. I try to watch and try to learn and, you know, be helpful if people need my advice. You know, I've just been so lucky that I played for the best coaches and coached some unbelievably great players and sat next to some really bright coaches. So kind of feel like I'd like to share what I was taught and help the game if I can. So, you know, I'm watching and learning all the time. And then when I go to visit other people that are coaching that I have a relationship with, if they need me, I give them my thoughts. I don't in any way try to interfere and tell them how to coach, but if they feel I can be helpful, I'm certainly there to try to do that.
And some of those great players and coaches that you came across in your career were with the Detroit Pistons. Looking back and talking to maybe the coaches and players as much as you have after those times in 2004 and 2005, what do you think is the legacy of that team all these years later?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at the history of the Pistons, there were some great teams. Obviously, what Coach Daly did, you know, with Isaiah and his group was incredible. You know, I always felt that our team, if we'd have been able to stay together, could have won a bunch of championships. But I think wherever I go, so many people talk about the way that 2014 played, how unselfish they were, how they defended, how they cared about one another. And basically, I think I coined the phrase play the right way. And I think if you talk about playing the right way, that team did that night in and night out. And, I'm kind of taken back. A lot of people told me it's a team that won without any superstars. And I always laugh about that because I think the way people assume a superstar is somebody that, you know, generally scores a lot of points. And I think there's a lot of ways that you can impact your team, you know, other than just scoring the ball. And to say that Ben Wallace or Rasheed or Chauncey, you know, any one of those guys wasn't a superstar, you know, just makes me shake my head and make me feel like maybe the game's passed me by a little bit.
Now, we've heard some of your Allen Iverson stories over the years about coaching him. When people ask about your time with the Pistons, is there any go-to stories that you have, or maybe a Sheed story that kind of adds a little color to that group? Is there something that you kind of go to when people ask about that group?
Yeah, but I don't know if I could say them on air. I'll give you one really great story. When we were playing the Lakers, you know, it was a 2-3-2 format, which really is a difficult format, to be honest with you. And we won game one, and then game two, it came down to the last seconds. We were up three, and, you know, we generally never fouled up three. I was always afraid of that. But, you know, 5 or 6 seconds, you know, if somebody needed a three to tie up, we'd talk about it. And I remember the Lakers called the timeout, and it was about 6 seconds to go. And I told the team, you know, I think we should foul. And they all looked at me and kind of grinned. Said, no, coach, we never foul. We can stop them. I said, no. I said, you know, they usually run some great stuff, and Kobe the kind of guy that maybe can make a big shot. So let's just take a shot at doing that. And then they looked at me and they said no. And then I finally said, all right, what if Shaq catches the ball? And we never hack a Shaq, and we never double team Shaq. So every time Shaq sees me, he wants to kiss me on the lips because he probably averaged 45 a game against us. But so they all looked at me and smiled and said, all right. And then when they huddled up, I'm sure after they left, they said, you know, screw him, we're not fouling. But they threw it to Shaq, and we couldn't get to him quick enough. He got rid of it, and Kobe hit an unbelievable shot over rip. And we lost in overtime. It's 1-1. We're going back to Detroit for three games. And on the plane ride back, they're in the front of the plane and playing cards. And I went up front, and I told those guys, hey, I apologize. I should have been more adamant in saying we had a foul. And they all looked at me and said, not so nicely, get my whatever back in the back of the plane. We're not coming back to L.A. So that was typical of that team. You know, another thing, time I remember, we held seven teams in a row under 70 points. That's unheard of. Teams get 70 and a half now. And I remember game eight, we were playing the Nets. And late in the game, we had them under 70. And a kid named Ramos hit a jumper over Darko as the clock went down. And New Jersey jumped up like they won the NBA championship because they scored 71. And I remember how upset all our guys were, you know, that string was broken. But I don't think anybody will ever do that again. Get close to it.
Speaking of the Pistons now, they bring in Blake Griffin, Stan Van Gundy's at the helm of the front office and the coaching staff. Do you have as a coach, do you kind of think about ways that Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin could coexist? And what do you kind of think about the feeling of where this team is at now and where the franchise is kind of headed these days?
Well, I mean, I'm a big Piston fan. You know, when I came to Detroit for those occasions, which, you know, they went out of their way to invite me there. I just got to know Mr. Gores a little bit, and I saw the way the players responded to him and how much he cared about them, and, you know, and how much he cared about the Pistons being successful, which when you have ownership like that that's so committed, it's really neat because, you know, I worked under one of the greatest owners ever, you know, Mr. Davidson. And he did everything he possibly could to give us a chance to win. And then, you know, Joe and John were, John Hammonds were really bright guys, and Scott Perry, George David, so many really bright people worked there. So I'm a big fan of the Pistons. I was a Bradley fan and Tobias Harris fan, and, you know, the big kid, I followed him at San Antonio, so I kind of liked him. I was a little bit, you know, surprised when they made the trade. But, you know, they've had so many injuries, and they've had a hard time getting all the right people on the floor at the same time. So it's kind of difficult right now for me watching them. And when you get a player like Griffin, you know, late in the year, it's not always the easiest thing to figure out how to use them. Hopefully last night is a start in the right direction, because there's so many teams that can still make the playoffs in the East. And if you make the playoffs in the East, I don't think there's any one team that I think is so dominant like the teams we see in the West. So if the Pistons are lucky enough to get in and they figure out a way that Blake's comfortable, and we all know that the improvement of Drummond this year is just remarkable. You know, there was talk about him being traded. Now, you know, you can make a case for him being one of the best players in the league. And it shows you, you know, you can develop and get young, make young players better. So I'm hopeful that, you know, they'll get this thing going in the right direction and figure out, you know, how to use Blake, because obviously they gave up a lot. And you're not going to get a talent, you know, like that unless you give up a lot. And hopefully it's a good thing that works out well.
Last question here for Coach Larry Brown, the Hall of Famer. You mentioned some of the jersey retirement ceremonies, and I met you a couple years ago down in the Virgin Islands. You were down there speaking at a coaching clinic put on by Milt Newton, your former player at Kansas, and he put it on for the locals. Milt is the assistant general manager for the Milwaukee Bucks. He was giving free clinics and does a ton to help out his homeland of the U.S. Virgin Islands and St. Thomas in particular. As you look back on some of the players that you coached and the relationships that you developed, do those kind of things kind of take on more importance as you look back on that career, some of the years and the relationships that you've made over all that time?
Well, I think that's everything. You know, I wouldn't have had the opportunities that I've been given without, you know, playing for Coach McGuire and Dean Smith and Mr. Iba and John McClendon, Alex Hannum, Pete Newell, you know, so many people like that. And then the guys that sat next to me, the coaches that have gone on and done really well, and the players that I've coached, that's everything. And when you see, you know, I have three managers in the NBA working. And when I see, you know, people like that succeeding in a game that I love, and allowed me to live a pretty neat life, it's the best. And that's why, you know, I'm a little bit uneasy now, because I feel I have so much to share that I want to show other people and teach other people what I was taught. Because I think, you know, in some cases, fundamentals are slipping. And we're getting kids that are younger and younger coming into the league. And they may have ability, but they're not being coached. They come out so much sooner. You know, they don't spend 3 or 4 years in college being taught how to play, to value the minutes they get, to understand the importance of being fundamentally sound. So that's a little frustrating for me. But, you know, I do love the game. And, you know, what makes me most proud is the people that meant the most to me seem to be doing pretty darn well and making an unbelievable contribution.
That was Hall of Fame coach Larry Brown, back from a winter interview we did in March, the former Pistons coach and coach of pretty much every other basketball team that's ever existed on the planet. But he took the time to spend some time with us here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. My memory got jogged about that interview as I talked to George Blaha on Wednesday. Again, I'll share that interview with you guys next week. But a couple of bucket list Pistons podcast interviews, so to speak, with a couple of guys that have tremendous insight over the years, can speak to a lot of things about the basketball world and the Pistons world in particular. And I felt like a lot of you guys benefited from hearing those guys, because we grew up watching those 04 teams, and with Blaha, we grew up watching the Bad Boys and the 04 teams, and he was a big part of that, big part of our childhood memories as well. So I'm looking to share that with you guys. Excited to hear what you guys think about that one. But thanks for joining us here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. We will be back tomorrow with some more news from the August NBA calendar, which is not very newsy. But anyway, this is your host, Matt Shook, and thanks for listening, everyone.